for those of you who have questions or comments, you can please raise your hand. We'll get a microphone to you as soon as we can. And I want to begin with Ms. Dorothea Johnson, who is a current resident of Lake Arbor Apartments. That's an area that we've heard a lot about in the news because they're all being forced out, I think, by the end of the year. And maybe you can share, Dorothea, some of what your reality has been like in the last several months.
Dorothea Johnson.
Oh, Dorothea, I'm sorry.
That's okay. A lot of people get it wrong. Well, to begin with, I've been in Lake Arbor at least since August 17, 2017. And since we've been there, we had a lot of children who didn't go to sleep at night, wake up, blood all in the eyes, mildew mold, you name it. And the landlords didn't care. They told my family and me and the 281 units we had to August the 31st to walk out of there, never been to court, and keep on going, and they gave us a piece of papers. They're gonna give us $200 each. It was signed an incentive package. And then we leave out, take our furniture and everything, whether we had any place to go or not. When we didn't leave out of there, they start on July the 15th, before this happened, they had 15 sheriffs come over to the Lake Arbor apartment and padlock. They told the people they had the 31st of July to get out. But they had people come over to the sheriff, which came over to the apartment, about 15 sheriffs in cars and motorcycle. They padlocked the people's house and threw them out in the street. People came home from work, they didn't have no place to go. One of them, including my oldest daughter, they told her she had 15 minutes to get her stuff out. And the next day, she had 10 minutes. And they didn't care where they went to. So when we didn't walk out of there August 31st, we had different attorneys, legal aides, say that we go to court, they'll go with us. I haven't been to court yet until, about a week ago.
So where are you living right now?
I am still in Lake Arbor apartment.
You are?
And
how did you manage that?
I prayed a lot.
Okay.
And when they talked to me, I told them, devils, I said, you're a liar. I have not been to court until I go to court, and I'm not going anywhere. So my family and me were still there. But they, August 31st, when we didn't go out of there, they decided that they're going to start harassing people. So they let people, I had bumblebees in my house. When the weather outside 103, 104 degrees during the summertime, inside my house, it was 92, 93, 94 degrees. They would not fix the heat, they would not fix the air, excuse me. They would not come kill the bumblebees. When I went up asking about killing the bumblebees, they told me that the bumblebees were endangered species.
At some point, they will make you leave, because at some point, they'll start tearing these buildings down, one would presume. Where have your neighbors who had to get out, whose units were padlocked, where have they gone?
Some of them they went to the shelters. They didn't have no place at the shelter for them. Some of them sleeping in the woods. Some went to Walmarts and had this, the people knew they didn't have no place to go, so they just let them take the rubber beds and the blow beds, and they went to people's house to blow them up, and some of them sleeping in, on the side of the bridge down here. I think off of Century Avenue, they had a lot of people sleeping out there with their children, their kids.
Is that April Lewis right next to you? I know that you didn't want to say very much. You're a former resident at Lake Arbor, but now you're a community activist, an organizer working on behalf of these residents. And one thing that you are quoted as saying kind of leapt off the page at me. It says, the focus seems to be, let's do the bare minimum to make it seem as if all is being done to reverse the housing crisis. And then you say, housing agencies are restrained greatly by regulations that cap their ability to adequately address the housing problem. Help me understand that from you.
Generally, what I'm seeing right now is they have a great intentional effort to be able to house these families, but unfortunately, they're running into obstacles that we already knew that they had. It's not just they can't afford it. They might have credit issues. They might have a criminal background. They might have evictions that will bar them from being able to find affordable, decent housing for them to move to. Now, on top of these residents speaking out, now they're also facing landlords that won't rent to them just because of them standing up for them rights. What we have here are people that wanted a decent house. They wanted the maintenance to be done that is required by law to be done, not to be kicked out. But again, through the efforts of Kara, which is doing her best, right, they're running into these challenges of just not allowing or not being able to meet requirements that's been set forth by the agencies to be able to help provide a stepping stone for individuals to do better or move up in economic mobility. So that's an issue. Yes, you have money, but again, if these requirements are not relaxed for the people that actually need it, it's not going to do anything. It's a problem.
It's one. We know we have an economic mobility problem in Charlotte. That's one problem. But the fact that you can also move in the other direction, into the downward spiral, which is what we're witnessing here from the folks who are being affected by what's going on at Lake Arbor, seems almost unsolvable. Not just for us, but certainly for them. Are there tools for you to help these people and people like them?
So I'll start with that, Mike, from a city perspective, and April mentioned that. So we talked about the rehab program, we talked about the House Charlotte program, we talked about the trust fund. One of the other things that we do, and it's not perfect, but we work with agencies, housing partner agencies to help, and landlords to help find housing for people who find themselves in unfortunate situations, landlords who might consider relaxing the criminal screen, as has been mentioned. Again, at the end of the day, what we still are wrestle with as a community, as a city and as a county, is simply a lack of supply of affordable housing.
And when you hear about, we know the problems at Lake Arbor evidently have been legendary for quite some time, and that's bad enough. But when you hear the fact that these people have had their units padlocked and then they're living under bridges and in the woods.
Right. And again,
which is worse.
Yeah. And again, I mean, there are people still at Lake Arbor. And one of the things that this community came together, and we won't take credit for just as a city alone, but Carol has been a part of this as well, is came together, particularly in the wake of Lake Arbor, to really help people find housing. So residents, if they were willing to and if they wanted to, could go do a household assessment to kind of figure out what each individual household need is. And then based on that, again, working with a group of housing partner agencies.
Has that happened in this case?
Yes, it has. Not everybody has been housed, but yes, that is an ongoing effort.
Okay.
Let me add a couple things. Also, April, I'm sure we'll be in sync. You know, this is classic slumlord. When she said they promised an incentive package, you all, the incentive package was you will get your security deposit back. That's required by law. It was you will get it back sooner than I have to give it back to you. 30 days are required. Maybe you'll get it in 2 weeks. And so the sad thing is there are other Lake Arbors. And so while so many wonderful things are being done for future affordable housing, we do need to figure out as a community, because I'm sure April will be able to share, we've not figured out fast enough what to do.
Let's get a microphone to you because no one can hear you.
I'm sorry. In my efforts, I feel that the efforts were done backwards. Within the community assessment that was actually done, the information that you found out was not actually utilized effectively, so that way we can address this in a way to be actually be able to present a stepping stone, programs, or continuum of services, so that way when this started in July, we could have had employment programs in place, so that way those that are not making enough could actually be in place and could have saved a certain amount of money to be able to move on without assistance, so that way the funding that was actually raised, we would need minimum amount because they've already had programs in place to be able to lift them. Not a hand out, a hand up.
What?
And also with me, I've been living off since my family, we've been homeless in 2013 because my house, the house we were staying in, my rent man sold it. We ended up staying in Hotel Airport Parkway Inn, used to be 2400 Wilkinson Boulevard for 4 years. Every day we went out putting in an application for housing. The landlords only wanted the application fee, but we never heard from them anymore. So after we left out there, one for Genesis Project 1 and Pat Garthen coming in July the 1st and break took us to Lake Arbor. We didn't go there first.
Right.
They put us at...
I want to get some other folks, give them a chance to talk, but you bring up some interesting points that I'd like these folks to address while we get the microphone to other people, and that is, when you face eviction, whether it's because the apartment you're living in is being sold and redeveloped, or whether it's because you couldn't pay the rent because it went up, because everything is going up around you, to find a new place, you have to have money to start utilities, you have to have money for that deposit, and the first and last month's rent in some cases, and other fees. Are there programs to help with those things?
I'll add, you also have to have paid out all of your electric bill that you might have owed.
Right.
And pet fees and, yes, everything. Crisis assistance does end up paying this for people. It is not a service of the agency. And so we've tried to do as much as we can, for example, for this unbelievable displacement. But no, there is not an agency in town whose role it is to help provide all that. And part of what is happening at Lake Arbor is we have incredible nonprofit agencies in town, but there's a mission for each agency, and there's not a system in place to come together to stretch your mission when there's a crisis. And that's what we've got to figure out how to do quicker.
So, but to back to your point, Carol, do you want to talk about the long-standing partnership that Crisis has had with the city of Charlotte in terms of rental utilities to try to help folks in when they find them maintain in their house?
Yes, and there's two, with crisis assistance, it's rent assistance help, utility assistance help. It was increased this year, the City of Charlotte. Thank you. And there's Community Link, which has a great partnership where it's amazing that you pay attention to the folks who have been displaced and say, let's do provide some of the assistance if possible.
David.
Mike, to partially answer your question a little bit further, in my coverage of affordable housing here, when we have had these situations where an apartment complex is being sold and people are being evicted, there is not any standard program. There's not any one agency that can take care of it. I've seen on several occasions situations where private citizens have started a fundraiser, a GoFundMe or something. One that comes to mind is Twin Oaks, which was a small apartment complex on 36th Street, where everybody got kicked out, and the landlord wanted them out as quickly as possible. And a private citizen got her neighbors together, and they raised enough money to help with some of this, to help people with their first and last month's rent and security deposits and things like that. But we don't have a program that does that solely. Should there be one? Maybe. It's one of the many problems that we have to solve.
One of the things I think we have to balance, because my fear is that if one of the things you have to worry about is if you do have this fund, I think some slum landlords will start kicking people out with the expectation that the community is going to take care of them. So I don't. There's often like this push and pull on this thing that is so difficult because you want people to have this safe and landing, but you also don't want to encourage the really bad actors out there to just start moving people out because the county and the city are going to take care of them.
Yeah.
And just to add to what Brian has said, in addition to all the funding that that the city has for housing. One thing that the council did last year with their last budget is they established a NOAA, Naturally Occurring Affordable Housing Fund. Again, we're never going to build enough new units, but they put money in the budget for the first time to help preserve some of these naturally occurring affordable housing developments. So again, is it perfect? No, but I think the council has looked for ways to expand the toolbox.
Okay, we're back here.
I want to preface my statement by saying I love all y'all up there on the stage, okay? But I'm an advocate, I'm a housing advocate. I work for the Stan Greenspan Center for Peace and Social Justice. My question is for you folks up there so that you'll know the impact of what your decisions are and for people like myself that's coming off of homelessness. Would you guys be willing to come to my homeless boot camp and spend a week with me on the street to know what it really feels like to be on the street in your city?
And can we each bring a couple people that we think would be great as well? Could make it a whole party?
Yeah, because I think I was born and raised in Charlotte. I was in the military, and I could have went anywhere in the world after my military service, but I chose to come back home. And home has changed so much since I've been back in 86 that I'm extremely disappointed in where we stand right now, because we live in two Charlottes right now. Those who have not. And I think a lot of times when you guys are making these decisions, you're making these decisions off of numbers and charts and pie charts, but not realizing that these people represent me, my friend Amy, my friend Red Lee, and these people are real. These people need your help. These people need you.
But James, you're also making an assumption about that you know each of our stories. No. Because I bet
you didn't have to sleep on the street last night.
What's that?
I bet you didn't have to sleep on the street last night.
Yep, you're true. That's right. But I can tell you that when I was growing up, we all had to live in one room because our heat was cut off. I grew up in Florida where during the summers when it was hot and I didn't know whether we were going to have air conditioning from day to day. I can tell you a lot of stories where I don't make decisions off of numbers. There are people who do that, but I hope, you know, one of the things I've tried to convey in just a couple of minutes here tonight is this is not something where, you know, I'm a philanthropist and these are real people, real kids, real things. I don't know I can give you a week for a boot camp, but I can guarantee I'll give you time, and I can tell you that my own story informs everything that I do. And by the way, it also informs the fact that I've told people all over the place that sometimes philanthropy does great things, and sometimes it exacerbates really bad behaviors. And that was what led us to the task force report. It didn't start from any place of, like, oh, this 50, it's a 50. That was just a point that confirmed to me that philanthropy had a role to play in the fact that some kids in Charlotte grow up without any sense of hope and aspiration or ability to achieve that. So I hear you, but please know that some of the things I do are informed by my own personal story.
Okay, over here.
Okay. So, okay, I'm gonna be real succinct because I got a whole bunch of stuff going over here. But my question, a question going back to the first panel that was up, and you were talking about legislation and all of that and developers. So I say this correctly, but you were talking about it's illegal for developers to put a portion for affordable. Did I say that? Did I hear
to
that?
Require? Well, the city cannot require a specific number of units to be what's called inclusionary zoning. Some places in the country have that. We are banned by the legislature from having
why,
that.
Why are we banned by the legislature? Because from what I've lived in Charlotte 24 years, and as I have watched this city grow and the housing market rise, the people who are now paying $300 to $500 for rent, they're not going to be able to do that anyplace. So my question is, why is that illegal? and what needs to happen to change it.
The legislature has to make that change. So you have to go to the Raleigh and demand that change of your legislature because...
Oh, I'm both.
We are a Dillon... I'm going to say this one more time. We're a Dillon Rules state.
Oh, God.
Meaning that they could dissolve the city of Charlotte right now if they wanted to and run it themselves. They have all the strings.
Yeah. Why? Yeah. Why? Wait, so that was established somewhere.
State constitution.
All right. So again, and all those things can be changed. So that's all my point is.
Right.
So we're talking about, you know, the impact of these people's lives, and I am so fired up right now. I'm trying to contain myself. It's really hard. But the bottom line, people's lives are impacted every day. And so you're talking about these people now, they're in a community, but you also talking about working people, you know, professionals who can't afford. So that gap is going to become even greater. And just like these people in Brook Hill and these other places are being moved out and become homeless, then that increases our homeless rate. So that continues to that cycle continues to perpetuate. And I'm glad we're having conversations. So kudos to you for that. Kudos for this whole year round that this discussion has been going on. But We're way past discussion.
Right.
And we were way past addressing things from a crisis situation.
So she asked the question, why, about the legislature. I know the city of Charlotte has a tenuous, at best, relationship with Raleigh, although it seems to be improving a bit under Mayor Lyles. How aware are they of this problem that we're talking about tonight, that it is about people, that it is about tools in the toolkit to allow us to do things that other communities around the country are permitted to do, like inclusionary zoning, like making a new developer set aside X number of units for affordable housing, and why, if they're aware of it, won't they act?
So I'm assuming you're directing
yes,
that
because you're with the city.
To me. When you say they, are you speaking my...
Legislators.
I would say yes.
Since they hold the ability to make this
legislature, the legislature is aware of that. And again, it's not just a problem in Charlotte. It is a problem across the state of North Carolina. You know, I can't speak for the legislature in terms of why they won't act. But what I can tell you is I work with my counterparts across the state, and we spend our time talking about, in the absence of that authority from this legislature, what tools can we do? What can we do now? So
But these are all workarounds. So let me ask you this question. I don't want to be political necessarily, but I'm going to be. If the legislature were run by Democrats, as it was in the past, would it change?
No.
I think it would. I'm going to put on my ex-pundit hat.
It ran it for 100 years. And
I'm going to put on my ex-pundit. Contributors are developers and others who don't want inclusionary zoning as a requirement.
I think that the legislature is currently the leaders in the legislature are rural. I mean, you've got Tim Moore from Cleveland County. You've got Phil Berger from Eden. I think that the problems of cities in general are not high on their list.
But it's easy to point fingers at the legislature. What if we point fingers at ourselves? Because
so we elect them.
And that's right. That's right.
But no, I mean, it is the perception of many in Charlotte that developers get whatever they damn well want. Yeah. So if that's not true, I don't know how it can't be true. Why, as the city council prepares to vote on this new zoning around the blue line, which will expand the influence of developers a half mile in each direction, why would they do that if they know that's going to push people out? They know we have this affordable housing problem. Then why zone it? Why change the zoning around? Chance it. Leave it the way it is.
Yeah. And Mike, I can't speak for the city council about why they choose to vote the way they do. I will go back to say that the city council has worked really hard on the planning staff on the transit-oriented development to have a density bonus. So as the future transit lines are being developed, to have an incentive for developers to include affordable housing in those developments.
So, Mike, what Pam can't tell you is, which I respect her position, is that we tried a lot of things when the light rail was being first put in, and we literally had council members at that time who said, we will not do it. They blocked everything. Other than inclusionary zoning, there are things, I think, that can be done to give you almost inclusionary zoning power. Like, you could speed up certain, like, if someone said, hey, we're going to do affordable housing, you could speed up their, because time is money to a developer. The land cost, but also, how quickly can I get this? What if we had two windows? One where you went with an affordable housing project that met certain criteria, and the other that was just all market rate. Maybe the market rate one goes a lot slower in the process than...
Isn't that quid pro quo?
No, you did not say that.
That's an evil word right now. But
what Brian is talking about has been done in Charleston. Yeah. Charleston has figured out that the people they need to run their tourist industry cannot live in Charleston, and it is a crisis. They're getting their legislature to pass inclusionary zoning, and the speed up process Brian just talked about, they've done it.
And I don't want this to turn into a negative discussion or bad Charlotte. And so we've talked about a couple things here. No, we can't do mandatory inclusionary zoning, but what we have done is through voluntary inclusionary zoning, we have realized a number of units where developers have come in and they've said, yes, we will have a certain amount affordable for X amount of years. That is on record. I can't spout those numbers off the top of my head, but we do have affordable units that will be included in projects. We went to the city of Charleston to look at what they've done. And so, as I said earlier in the conversation, we're looking at things from a regulatory perspective. We have about 16 rezoning cases per month the city council hears. We're talking about as a staff, and we're gonna start implementing having several spots reserved for developers who agree to put affordable housing in, expediting the rezoning process. So there are things that we are doing and we believe we can do that will help with the problem in the absence of inclusionary zoning, mandatory inclusionary.
And let me just say, inclusionary zoning is good. I wish we had it, but New York has it and they've got a horrific affordable housing problem.
Oh, yes, they do. Okay, over here.
Okay. Hi, my name is Charlene Mack and I grew up on Columbus Circle. It's in between Freedom and Wilkerson on the west side of Charlotte. And as you all are talking, Carol, you said this earlier about inclusive voices. Something that comes to mind is a book called The Prize, written by Dale Rostikoff. So basically, for those unfamiliar with it, it's Cory Booker, Mark Zuckerberg, and Chris Christie who announced this $100 million donation for the school district in Newark. And then that money is matched, but it goes toward $1,000 to consultants, and very few of the dollars actually make it to the school district. And that program or that initiative was discussed outside of those like mostly impacted by the work. Like, they heard about it for the first time on Oprah. So as I think about living here in Charlotte and all the initiatives that have happened, there are people that make more money off of the pursuit of equity than those struggling within it, like myself. So it has me thinking about, with equity being such a lucrative business, which has its pros and cons, should there be less weight on those of us who grew up in poverty and more weight on the nonprofits and the different sectors? And if so, what sort of scorecard can we create for nonprofits to better utilize funds, and how can we improve transparency?
So, you know, when I was responding a little earlier, what I said, so I've been in the nonprofit world for about 20 years or so, I guess now, wow. But there are nonprofits that are doing fantastic work and they're worthy of your charitable investment and all of that. And then there are a lot that I think have just kind of been a perpetual machine for people to make a living off of, not necessarily for the benefit of their clients. And I think that's where, when the economic opportunity information first came out from Raj Chetty in 2014, I was at this low point in my, like, sort of, I go through these peaks and valleys about philanthropy. And I was just like, why can't we make a change in literacy rates and housing and all of these things? And often it is because the nonprofits that we charge, you know, we charge them to do the work. One, we underinvest in them. Sometimes we don't pay the salaries that people should make in that field. But then we also just expect less sometimes, and some people create nonprofits and just, that's again, that's how they're gonna make their living off the backs of others. And so I think you're right, we need to figure out how do we start to grade the impact of nonprofit organizations and figure out who's doing the best work in the community. It's really difficult, but I think it's something that we need to figure out how to do better in the future. Mm-hmm. But you're right. And the Zuckerberg thing is a great example of $100 million that went poof into the air. And to Mark Zuckerberg, it doesn't matter because he's got billions and billions. But think about the kids who had expectations or the schools that could have been better. I mean, what could you really do with $100 million if you did it the right way?
On rating, that means we're either overtaxing or I don't know, like you all tell me. So like there should be a scorecard from the city. I promise you, if you gave me a six-figure salary, I could figure some stuff out.
Okay, I think we have time for, we're gonna lose the room soon. We have time for two more questions, I think.
Yeah, and speaking of six-figure salaries, I was at another presentation recently, and they were comparing what the 50 million bond that was approved and what the money has been used for so far. And my takeaway from that meeting was there is actually no way of measuring what has been done with the money. So one thing I want, Mike, for example, is whenever you do have the mayor on your show, let's see, okay, this was the plan for the 50 million. Now we have 270 million. What have we been able to do with the money compared to the original plan?
Well, okay. We have Pam Weidman here right now. That's a good question.
And so I dare not speak for the mayor, but if you think about the plan for the money, so the city council approved a Housing Charlotte framework, and that framework was built on three pillars. It was built on building new affordable housing, it was built on preserving what is already there, and it was built on promoting family self-sufficiency. So in terms of what has been done with the 50 million, we talked a little bit earlier, in terms of new construction and preservation, you have about 1,392 units to be exact, underway now from new construction and preservation.
I think his question was, we must have had a plan for the 50 million, which we got, but we actually got 270 million. So what have we done with all that extra money?
Sure. So and maybe Brian wants to speak a little bit about the extra money, but I'm particularly speaking from the Housing Trust Fund. And what I would say is the Charlotte Housing Opportunity, the reason we've been able to do so many units so quickly is because we did have that infusion of private sector dollars.
Yeah, so with both funds, we have an accountability sort of framework that we're building into the fund. And so part of the money was for rental subsidies. We have reported out numerous times to both the county and the city on how the rental subsidies are being deployed. Our success rate, we have about 75% of the individuals who go through this program that we have called Away Home, 75% of them remain housed, employed, I can't remember the other criteria, in an apartment, all of those things, 2 years after we've given them the subsidy. So we're trying to be as transparent and as accountable as we can on these projects. I'm trying to think of all the different ways. There's a number of levels of accountability that we're trying to build into these.
Okay, I think we have one more question. Go ahead.
I'm looking for a way to get there. I'd like to give thanks to Ms. April Evelyn Lewis, who's been a great advocate on our behalf. Ms. Lewis has been living there in the Steel Creek area for over 10 years. She's not able to cook and clean for herself. I voluntarily go over there on a daily basis because I'm disabled as well. I'm mentally, she's physically disabled. And I go over there on a daily basis to help take care of her. Now, in the process of that, some mold was found in the house in the Steel Creek area. She reported to an organization that she participates in, and we were able to get the mold eradicated, supposedly. So what happened, the city came over there with a meter, and the mold was still there. They bring that attention to the people who own the apartment, and they told Ms. Lewis that they want her out of there. Now, here she has been paying rent and hadn't missed a payment for 9 to 10 years consecutively, and because of something's wrong with the apartment, then now she's got it going to be put out. She's going to court next week, and she's going to be homeless with 9 years of stuff, no family up here, and only people who assist and volunteer and help her. And this lady hadn't did anything to anybody. So why is it that we don't have anywhere for people like this to go who's not able to help take care of themselves? She's been living in an apartment for 9 years, hadn't missed any rent. It's nothing against it. She can't help with a physical condition. So now you're telling me we don't know what we're going to do, but I pay taxes here. I was born and raised in Charlotte. My family and my grandfather, my grandfather's grandfather, our ancestors, they helped with this land. And this is the land I thought that I love and the place that I thought that I want to be. But I'm looking at it now, and it's turning around, and it's biting me in my behind, man. And you know what? I'm mentally disabled, but it don't even matter about me anymore, man. You know what I mean? And I'm going to tell you something, man. This lady needs a place to stay. And she can. I help her pay her rent, because it ain't about me no more.
So what if anything, can be done in that area?
So there's an organization that we work with, Community Link. And that's one of the things that Community Link does, is help in instances like this to help people find housing. Also, affordable housing. And so that's one of the immediate things that can be, we can get her linked up with Community Link to help her find some housing.
But we have a shortage of anywhere between 31 and 51,000 units. How can you help her?
So they have a group of landlords so we have a shortage of for affordable housing. I mean, I don't want to sit here on the moment, on the spur of the moment, and kind of guess what's out there for her, but I would say an immediate next step is to work with Community Link. So I don't know her income.
How does she reach Community Link?
I will see her after this is over and make sure the beautiful lady in the red glasses and the gentleman standing up there.
All right.
Yes, and Harold Rice. Thank you, Harold. Harold, okay. Is a Community Link.
Harold, stand up again so they can see. I don't think they look right there. Everybody, we have to release the room to the Harvey B. Gantt Center. We want to thank them very much for partnering with us on this event tonight.